From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. This is not the morning after. It's too late now to console half the nation about the decision the other half made. Also, there's no point this week in excoriating the press yet again for its many lapses this election season.
Because this week, the media have been very busy excoriating themselves. Not for failing to say early enough and loud enough that the aspiring emperor had no clothes, but for failing to project last year's punchline as this year's president-elect. So, as the duly appointed spokesperson for the entire American media, all I can say is, oops.
We're all sitting here sort of silence in shock.
Pollsters missed it. Correspondents missed it.
We all missed the biggest political story of our lifetimes.
And I think we all thought it couldn't happen.
It was an upset, all right, in all senses of the word, due to the fact that the electorate was whiter, older, more rural, and far angrier at the powers that be than pollsters and pundits had anticipated. That much is clear.
What's a little less clear is why those voters came out for Trump in districts that had previously polled Democratic. And in that, the results served as a kind of Rorschach test for talking heads. Because when seeking answers, all of us, even journalists and pundits, tend to start searching in territory we already know, like racism.
This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president, in part. And that's the part where the pain comes.
Sexism.
There probably is a strong sentiment about not having a woman president. And the fact that we're seeing this, particularly among non-college educated white men, is not surprising.
Or America's Whitman Sampler of woes.
Voters think Donald Trump can fix three things, you guys: terrorism, immigration, and trade.
The weird thing is, the mainstream media, not known for issuing mea culpas, actually are being a little hard on themselves. News outlets have been beating their breasts about missing the story, but in fact, they mostly didn't. For instance, here's CBS Sunday Morning.
Trump voters have had enough of holding their nose.
I mean, I'm mad. I've been mad. I'm one of the angry, you know, voters that they've been discussing for the last year.
And NPR.
44-year-old Jim Bell works in nearby Dearborn. He's a Ford employee represented by the United Auto Workers Union.
However, I leaned more towards Trump just because the change that Obama wanted to bring, I think Trump will.
Bell does like what the billionaire candidate says about trade, including that American factories will come roaring back.
And Fox News.
On the one hand, you have declining manufacturing jobs and other blue-collar industries in a very heavily blue-collar area. But on the other hand, you have the things that move in when these jobs go away. So you have rising mortality rates, rising heroin epidemic, and even, you know, rising family breakdown rates. And so for the folks who grow up in these areas, what they've seen, frankly, is a community, a neighborhood, struggling in a lot of different ways. And they've seen a Republican Party and a Democratic Party that hasn't really responded.
I think the media is blaming itself too much.
Chris Arnotti, a photographer and writer who logged 100,000 miles this election season talking to Trump supporters, concedes that much of the media, gripped by the candidate's, let's say, quirks, came late to this narrative, that in fact they should have been covering this slice of the electorate for decades. But Arnotti also concedes that the death of newspapers and the consequent lack of local reporting made that inevitable.
I think the idea that the media saw it but didn't believe it is a much stronger argument than the media didn't see it. I don't want to beat up on the media. Readers and editors and even writers of these pieces suffer from biases that they don't want to admit because it's uncomfortable. I certainly suffered from that in the sense I didn't want to see Trump win. I think if I had less of a bias personally about wanting to see Hillary win, I would have been more open. All the chips were there for me to see that Trump would win. All the pieces were there. I spent time in the states he flipped. I spent time in Pennsylvania. I spent time in Ohio. I spent time in Wisconsin. I saw plenty of people who voted for Obama who were voting for Trump. So I saw it. And it should have been pretty easy for me to then make the next intellectual step.
So the allegation goes, we media elites and our like-minded readers suffered a collective delusion. Well, if so, why? Here's the conventional wisdom expressed by the conventionally wise Tom Brokaw.
I do think that Washington and even those of us in the national media have walled ourselves off far too much from where people live.
And that is certainly undeniable. But it's not the only reason, because those cozy cocoons that the media and the rest of us nestle in don't exist only on the coasts.
They exist in our heads. We're literally wired to believe what we want to believe and ignore what we don't. I was thinking of a piece I did some years back called Your Brain on Politics. Here's a little piece of that. Emory University professor Drew Weston is the author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. In a 2006 fMRI study, he used brain scans to see what happens inside a voter's head when confronted with candidates' statements that showed lying or pandering. The volunteers in the study had no trouble reasoning when dealing with the incriminating statements of the opposing candidate, but when they confronted hypocrisy from their own candidate, they were lost in space.
The first thing that was activated were a series of negative emotion circuits that were basically, for any of your listeners who can remember Lost in Space, it was Will Robinson, danger, danger. They saw danger, they saw threat, and you could see it all over their brains. Then what you saw was activation in a part of the brain called the anterior cingulate. It monitors and deals with conflict. So you could see that they were in conflict. They were trying to figure out a way out of that conflict. And then you saw, after they had come to their conclusion that there was really no problem for their guy, what you saw was activation in parts of the brain that are very rich in the neurotransmitters that are involved in reward. These are the circuits in the brain that get activated when junkies get their fix.
You mean once they figured out how best to lie to themselves, they got a blast of oxytocin or something?
Very, very close. That's right. So they got this huge blast of dopamine, which is involved in reward.
In other words, the same thing you get when you take Coke.
That's exactly right. There was no reasoning at all going on.
Obviously, this wasn't just the media's problem. In fact, it seems to have affected the entire U.S. population. To think that the 19th century historian Thomas Carlyle called economics the dismal science, he clearly hadn't reckoned with biochemistry.
Coming up, what the numbers tell us about the state of the nation and what they don't.
This is On the Media.